Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 177, recorded on May 2nd, 2013. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Michael. Exciting time for you. Any snow? Any animals attacking you?
No, but actually, I hear that that's actually what's going on with you, that you have snow and you had some sort of... Would you call a tick an animal? Is that an animal or is that an insect? That's an insect, right?
It's an insect.
Okay, so it wasn't an animal, but you were attacked.
Well, it was walking on me.
When insects
it did delay
attack.
The show momentarily when I realized what was crawling on me and had to make it go away.
Yeah. Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am excellent, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing quite well. It was a little warm here today, but otherwise, okay.
Yeah. It's pretty mild here today. A little bit chilly. So since we've got the weather out of the way.
Yeah, we always have to start with the weather or space.
The weather
or
space.
There's a space thing.
Is there a space thing?
Yeah. They did a successful... powered flight of the new Virgin Galactic spaceship.
Oh. Yeah.
This past week.
Yeah, I did see that. That's pretty cool. It didn't go to space, but they actually...
Flew it.
Yeah, they flew it before, but they didn't... It wasn't powered, so they brought
right, they did the gliding
I think. Yeah, they just let it glide before, and this time they actually fired up the rocket motor on there and then had it come back, and it was all good.
And it went supersonic.
Yeah,
which is cool.
First private plane ship to do that since they shut down the Concorde program.
Sweet.
Is that true? Because
that's what they
said. I thought. Okay, because this is Spaceship Two we're talking about,
yes.
Right?
Yep.
I thought Spaceship One did it as well.
You know, that's interesting, but that's what the that you have a good point.
So maybe this is the first time this particular craft has gone supersonic.
Yeah, I thought they said, non-private, basically. But, I wonder if they consider it a commercial vehicle at this point because they have sold tickets, I think.
Oh, that could be.
So maybe that, but they didn't have any, I doubt they had any passengers on this.
No,
flight,
they didn't. So. There's just a test pilot.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a space thing. So now we can start the show.
Okay, good. Yeah, I love the way the thing feathers. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
That shuttlecock, it's the shuttlecock maneuver.
Oh, okay.
It amazes me the wings don't just pop off because of the way they can rotate.
Yeah.
It was based on, he got the idea from a shuttlecock from badminton. Because they needed a way for it when it re-entered to dramatically slow, I think, its rate of descent.
Right. Yeah, definitely, but without a lot of significant reheating.
Or exactly.
Heating. I guess it's not a frozen dinner,
so
it should just be heating.
To put the craft at like the perfect angle, so they actually unlocked the wings.
Kind of.
Yeah, they actually unlocked the wings from the fuselage, and then it sort of falls into this like perfect angle. For re-entry.
Yeah, it like a feather.
Yeah.
So.
Like a badminton shuttlecock.
Mm-hmm. Coming from space.
Yep.
Because that happens. So Apple released an update for iOS 6 today, just for the iPhone 5, iOS 6.1.4.
I didn't update yet.
With new speakerphone audio.
Is that it?
Yeah, speakerphone audio profile. That's what it says. Updated audio profile for speakerphone. 11 megabytes. So it's a big profile. So there's got to be something else in
because
there.
Because some people use big words.
Uh-huh. Gotta, yeah.
You know, there might be a lot of other stuff in that profile, and to update the one piece that they needed, they have to replace the entire file.
Possibly. So, Jeff, have you updated it?
I did, but I haven't had any speakerphone calls since then.
Okay.
I'm doing it right now.
All right, so we're all going
to
call each other. It's not the special, the improved audio quality that they talked about with the iPhone,
that's
right?
From the carriers.
Right.
The carriers have to add support for that. AT&T said they're doing it this year, and of course, T-Mobile already has it.
Right. Yeah, have you experienced that? Have you heard what that sounds like? Is it significant?
It's supposed to be significant.
I would like that. You know, it's most obvious how horrible the quality of audio over cell phones is still today when you call any place that plays music for when you're holding. Because it's not that evident when someone's talking to you, but as soon as you get placed on hold, I mean, even if you're calling Apple, who you would think would be very concerned about quality, the quality of the Muzak is just terrible.
Yeah, makes me sad.
Yeah, it's coming, and I still have 4G in my area. I periodically check for LTE.
I was having a weird. Sorry, I was just going to say.
Okay, you go, and then I'll go.
We got bad delay. Sorry, folks. I was just going to comment real quickly. I was having a weird bug, and I don't know if anybody has run into this, where over the weekend I was somewhere in, I was up at the La Brea Tar Pits, and it my phone kept dropping the LTE. It kept falling back to 4G when there was perfect 5-bar LTE up in the area. But I would go into airplane mode, reconnect, it would go to LTE, and then 30 minutes later or whatever, I'd look at my phone and it would be back on 4G. I don't know what that was all about.
Yeah, I don't know. That could be due to any number of things. Maybe the phone's smart enough to say, hey, maybe if LTE isn't any faster than 4G, why not power down the radio a bit?
I didn't even think about that.
Don't know. I mean, I'm just...
It just felt annoying because I'd pull up the browser and things would be slow and then I'd connect to LTE and then everything would be fine.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So now you go, Jeff, because I got to go open the door because the dog is freaking out.
Okay. So the higher quality audio thing for phone calls will work only if both people are using phones or networks that support it.
Oh, both people. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much
a two-way thing.
Nobody on T-Mobile is going to hear it either. Unless they're calling someone else who has an iPhone.
Unless they're calling another iPhone 5 owner. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's also on T-Mobile.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Yeah. Yeah. My guess is that the next iPhone model will be out before iPhone 5 owners ever have a chance to really take advantage of the high quality audio.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
What can you do?
Buy a new phone.
Complain.
Yeah, complain. That's our favorite thing to do. So we've been getting some details recently on iOS 7 and specifically what Sir Johnny Ive has been doing for us on that front. And so I think we discussed it last week that, of course, it's going to be a much flatter design than it has been in the past. And of course, there hasn't really been a big update in the design since the original iPhone. It's stayed pretty much consistent. And based on reports from 9to5Mac, they're hearing that they're going to be very significant. I think before we were hearing that they weren't going to be significant, so this is interesting. It's going to be very, very flat. All signs of gloss, shine, and skeuomorphism will be gone. And reportedly, and this is corroborated by John Gruber, who said this a couple weeks ago, that Apple is pulling engineers from the OS X team over to iOS to get this to happen. So on, in some ways, when I hear this, that the big thing for iOS 7 is going to be the full redesign. Johnny Ive is just throwing everything in the garbage and redesigning everything. And I think, well, okay, this is going to be essentially all the buttons are going to stay in the same place. They're not really going to change how things work too much. They're probably just going to change the artwork and how the stuff looks. But then when I hear that OS X engineers are coming over and it's requiring a lot of time and a very concentrated effort, that it seems like it's going to be more than just a shiny new coat of paint.
Yeah, I think that's the case.
Or I guess it wouldn't be some shiny. Of the rumors,
yeah, it's more than a shiny new paint job. And it sounds like from the rumors that we're looking at major revisions to the way some of the key apps work, like Calendar and Mail.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, and there were also rumors that because of what one person was quoted as saying, deforestalization.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it's a big word.
Boy, howdy.
That
deforestation?
Yes, deforestation, exactly. Yeah, they were saying that due to all the deforestation.
Deforestalization. That's right, right?
Yeah, deforestalization.
I get it.
What?
Ah, they're clever.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So because of it, that they were saying a lot of the features, or at least a significant portion of the new features in iOS 7, would be delayed past the 0.0 release, is what was being said initially, and that they're working very, very hard to get something ready for the developers conference next month. However, with that said, what's his name? Dalrymple. Jim Dalrymple.
Famous, the beard.
Yeah, famous one wordsman. Famous yepsman. he was quoted as in response to someone saying that iOS 7 will not be delayed, he replied, yep. So that is the anointed yep that we all believe in. So I guess it won't be delayed.
Not to be confused with the wild eep.
No. A few people have made that mistake, confusing the two. Uh-huh. And all that we found were a few bone fragments in the beard.
Yeah. So I guess, that's my main concern, is that I don't want it to just be a fresh coat of paint situation. I'm hoping for, as we've talked about, a lot of improvements in functionality. Although I guess one thing I am leaving out, what has been talked about, is that they're also working on what some have called at a glance information. So the stuff that, like, I would say the big thing that I am most drawn to by Windows Phone is the at-a-glance tiles that they have. I think that's pretty cool. And I love the idea of not having to jump around to three or four different apps to figure out what's going on. The ability to just turn your phone on and see, yep, nothing else is going on. I put it away and you don't have to worry about it, or have to look through your notifications, or have to go and find the five or six apps that have the little red bubble on them. I think that's a really cool idea. And I think that's something that iOS could definitely benefit from, in addition to deforestalization.
So you're all for more information vomit.
I'm all for...
I think that's exactly what Michael just said.
I guess that is what I said.
He wants data barf.
Yeah, I want data... you're putting data barf in my mouth. words, data barf words in my mouth.
Yeah.
But yes.
I'm kind of rebelling. I'm starting to rebel against that. I think my life has too much data. I think we talked about this last time. Too much data vomit in my life.
I think
so
too.
In my visual field.
So you're saying that you appreciate the need to have to go to a bunch of different places to get the information you're looking for?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Because
yes.
It slows you down?
It's like a filtering system.
Yeah, it's like a forced filtering system. I'm starting to turn off a lot of stuff. Like, again, I had kind of waited so long on moving to, I think what really triggered it for me is I had waited so long on moving to Mountain Lion because I just had projects I was working on. It wasn't because I didn't want to run Mountain Lion.
Yeah.
But now that, you know, I've got the notification system and I've never been a big fan of Growl. And so, like, there comes one now. Right now, like, my email notifications come in, and it's a Google alert, and I don't really care about that right at this moment. Like, I want to just be recording the podcast. I want to focus on that. So,
yeah,
like everything seems to be vying for my attention now. My phone, my Twitter feed, I just want it all to stop. So, yeah. It's probably just me getting old and grumpy, but
no, I agree. I think that it definitely is an issue. I think that it causes issues with people's concentration, of course, because you're getting that that thing going off in your vision, and at the same time, and also I also think that it
squirrel
exactly it really screws up your ability to. Actually focus on something, even if something's not actually pulling at your attention, even if you're not getting the notifications, you sort of build up a tolerance and have a desire to go after it. So even if you don't get those notifications, you say, oh, well, let's open up the App Store and see if there are any more updates. And let's pull down my notification center and see what's in there. And oh, check out the news and see if there's any new news or anything like that. That it just, yeah. It totally screws you up.
So I'm rebelling against push, and I think I need more pull in my life. Like more like, okay, when I want to do email, I'm going to open up my email and do email. When I want to have Twitter, I'm going to open up Twitter and do Twitter.
So what I actually just heard just now, someone, Jim Dalrymple just messaged me and told me that they're actually planning on putting in the Merlin Mann switch in settings so that if you want that... If you don't want any push and you want to silo off your email and do all the getting things done thing, then you switch that on.
That would be awesome.
That would be pretty awesome, actually. I would like that. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to get things done.
Yeah,
especially with all this stuff going on.
You're constantly wiping off vomit.
Which, if you have children, you expect, but you don't want that with the rest of your world.
Yeah, I need the little sawdust packs like I used to have when I worked at the Six Flags.
Oh yeah, maybe that's the code name.
I worked on the bumper cars, so we always had like a surplus, and like the folks from the roller coasters and like the other rides would always be coming over to like
hey,
you guys have those things? Oh yeah, we got plenty. Here's a case. See you tomorrow.
That's the code name of iOS 8 is sawdust.
Yeah.
I need those little packs for my digital life. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, clean that up. Sweep it away.
Actually, that would be kind of cool. So yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to effectively use status board to be the place that I go when I want to have a lot of information all at once and then not use other things like not have as much being shoved in my face from push notifications.
Yeah. I mean that's kind of a good model because that's a thing that's almost like the radio in the background, you know, that here's the breaking news report, but most of the time you can sort of ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of situation. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe turning it off is just the better way to go. I don't know. All I know is that I find myself more and more, if I really pay attention to it, because I think society and a lot of us have become immune to it because it's just so prevalent. you know, as somebody pointed out, I mean, you turn on any TV and even like local news is doing it now. You know, it started with like the CNN and the C-SPAN and what have you. But I mean, just watch your local news or even just a, you're trying to watch a TV show and they're doing it to you, right? You've got the some sort of ticker along the bottom. You've got the promotional thing. The one that really gets me is the promotional thing for like the station that you're watching. And it has to be animated, right? And it has to pop up and it has to have, you know, something going on to draw your attention. And but they're drawing your attention away from their own content. So it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's exactly what you said. It's data barf.
It's data barf.
This is why I don't like to watch television news, because there's so much junk all around the edges of the screen that they actually have to give you a smaller image than your television screen can handle or can support, so that they have room for all these animations and tickers and sliders, and it's too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of starting to rebel the other way. I think it's gone to the point where it was cool at first and neat and fun, and now it's just become a little bit exhausting to me. So anytime we talked about newer technologies that's going to push forward more of that sort of thing, it's starting to turn me off. It's like, I don't know if I really care about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I want developers to start adding in more fine level controls for their push notifications in their apps. I don't want it to be an all or nothing toggle switch. It's because a lot of stuff that gets pushed to me, I don't care about. But there might be like one specific type of data that I want to get pushed from one specific app. Okay, give me the level of control so I can say just that data gets pushed and the rest of it I don't care about.
Yeah, I'd be with you there too. I understand where that comes from, and I often have that same desire, and then at the same time, I kind of step back from that and I look at it and I go, go look at your now in iOS, you know, go in and you've got to go in and manage location services, right? And just even going in there,
yeah, that is a big
mess. Overwhelming.
Yeah.
And by the same token,
yes,
you know, it's not just location services, go into privacy and look at that. You know, it's just like suddenly you have a million toggle switches now that you have to like manage and organize and deal with and be aware of. And if you forget to flip one, suddenly, you know, you're this other situation that we're talking about, this information vomit situation is out of control. So it almost just becomes like you're spending your whole day, rather than using an app and doing the thing you want to do, you're spending all your time managing your data stream rather than consuming your data stream. And I guess
that's a good point. And
that's starting to turn me off. Yeah. Yeah. So that brings me back to where we started this whole thing, where I'm just starting to turn more to a poll scenario.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
We'll see. You'll probably be able to turn it off.
Well, you can, and I like that. I think that's the way to go. At the same time, though, there's this fine line of at what point does it become more cumbersome to manage that than to, and then you just like, then you rebel against the whole thing. It's just like, forget it. I'm not even turning the computer on.
Yeah.
Like, we're riding that fine line. And Google Glass is just the ultimate manifestation of that whole problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
In my mind.
It sure is. And I like the way they try to spin it.
Now let's just beam it right into our eyeball because, you know, it's not already prevalent and left. I want to have information vomit everywhere I go.
Yeah, I'm on my vision always. But I like the way they try to spin it where they say that it's to engage you further with society rather than what you're doing with your cell phone, which is less engaging than having the internet permanently projected on your eyeball.
Okay, I've seen two people in the wild with Google Glass.
Oh, I haven't yet.
Neither one of them was engaged in their environment or with anyone around them. They were totally in their Google Glass thing. And yeah, one of the guys was at CES, and he was walking the expo floor, and it almost looked like he had a neurological disorder because he's kind of looking up and off to the side, and his head's twitching a little bit while he's doing all this. And it's because he was using the Google Glass, and he's watching that and not paying attention to where he's going or what he's doing.
Wow. So I guess, did you hear that John C. Dvorak thinks that Google Glass is a prank? That it's a giant global prank?
That's awesome. I think he's right. I totally
and the whole purpose, yeah, the whole purpose of it, the culmination of the prank was getting Scoble to take a picture, or have someone take a picture of Scoble naked in his shower wearing Google Glass, which I think is the new go-to.
That's what I've heard. I've only heard about it, but then when someone said the new go-to, I said, you know what? I don't need to see it.
No,
the old go-to was enough. Oh, man.
I'm just telling you right
someone
now.
Somebody needs to buy him a shirt that says, I'm the new Goatsy.
He would wear it. He would totally wear it, and he would love it, too.
Of course he would.
I want to throw a warning out to anybody at this point. If I'm standing at a urinal anywhere, and you walk in and you have Google Glasses next to me, I'm punching you in the face.
Well, you know, the do you remember the Justin TV phase where there was the actual Sir Justin of Justin TV? And there were a couple other ones, but him specifically, every once in a while he would have to walk into the bathroom as humans do. But he wouldn't take his thing off. What he would do is just turn the camera up while he went to the bathroom. And I don't recall whether or not it was muted, but it's probably something I blocked from my memory. But Google Glasses don't, or Google Glass, I should say, doesn't have that sort of ability to very distinctively either turn it off or point it up or away to indicate to all those around you that it is not happening right now.
Or that I'm assuming when it's recording, it has some sort of blinky light, though, on the front, right?
Like, I don't think it does.
Really? It's that covert? Yeah.
It'd be cool if it...
Like, then I'm totally punching you in the face if you walk in and you're standing at the urinal next to me and you have those on.
I would really enjoy it if they, if Google Glass had, you know, like in the when Captain Picard was turned into a Borg when he had that laser on his head. If that's what happened when you started recording, if you, yeah, and then maybe your key phrase to start recording would be like, "I'm Locutus of Borg." And you guys thought I wasn't a nerd.
You know, Google Glasses as a concept, you know, as a tech geek, it's hard. It's this catch 22 because you're like, this is like really cool technology. This is like an interesting thing, right? This is the future. And at the same time, you look at it and go, I don't know if I want to really live in that future the more and more I think about it.
No, I don't. And I don't think a lot of people do, but I will have to wait and see. I think it's more of a, I think what people are looking for is more of the Windows 8 Live Tile type stuff and the push notification stuff, all that stuff that you're really excited about, Adam.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's an experiment that we as a society need to go through, right? So that we can learn. And it's going to be great from that standpoint. It is going to change the sort of social norms. I mean, I think inevitably wearable computing or ubiquitous computing is something that's coming. And so we're sort of at the infancy stage of this sort of revolution of figuring out how does this work? Now that we have the technology to enable these sorts of things, we sort of have to go through this renaissance, this learning process of how are these things going to fit in? How are they going to work? What are the new social norms that we're going to have to develop? The etiquettes, the protocols, and things like that. And you go through that with all kinds of technology revolutions. So historically, if you look at it, it makes sense. It's just we're in this weird phase where this is like a whole new, this whole wearable computing, ubiquitous computing kind of thing is brand new. I mean, it's just on the very front end of it. So
yeah, I remember when the etiquette for if you had a phone call that you would if you were at a restaurant or in a movie theater or something. Well, a restaurant's a better example. That when you get the phone call, you excuse yourself from the table and either go outside of the restaurant or go into a secluded area where you wouldn't be disturbing others type situation. And I feel like that sort of etiquette is totally lost at this point. And I rather like that.
Yes, it is.
I'm not saying that I like the etiquette's gone. I like the old etiquette. Although I don't.
Most normal humans do.
Yeah, but you know, it's weird. I don't think that I really ever take calls in a restaurant. Come to think of it, I think it's more textual based stuff. And even I would say that right there is pretty extreme. I think more of it when I do take my phone out when I'm with a bunch of friends at a bar or restaurant. I'm usually just like checking into Foursquare or maybe messaging someone saying, "Hey, where are you?" kind of thing. So
I still say that Pixar is the barometer of the future.
It is, yeah. That and Idiocracy.
Ah.
That was some pleasant music. What was that?
That was
Tokyo train noises. I changed my notification alert for OS X Mountain Lion.
Oh, nice. Is that the
default alert sound?
Is that the Zen pack that you have?
It is Tokyo train sounds.
Okay. I think it's iRing Pro Zen pack or something like that. I have a bunch of Tokyo train station sounds on my phone.
Yeah, this is actually a hack for, I covered it on the MacCast at one point. And I think it was, of course, Erica Sadoun over at TUAW that pointed out that there's a pretty easy way to hack your default alert sound for mm-hmm. notifications in, going back to our information vomit conversation, that's what that was, in Mountain Lion.
Well, you just swap out the sounds?
Yeah, you basically replace the, I can't remember the instructions. You replace whatever the default sound is with this, and you give it the same name, and you know, you go into your library file or whatever. There's a place where the audio file is pulled from, and you basically replace. I forget what the default one is. It's on a MacCast. Just listen to the MacCast.
Yeah, just listen to the MacCast. Just check it out. So yeah,
better yet, go to TUAW because they're the really smart people that told me how to do it. So.
Mm-hmm. Or go to the MacCast, listen to it, and in that episode, Adam tells you where you can go at TUAW to find it. It's a win-win.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I should talk about. We're going to talk about an independent game developer that. That played a prank on some pirates of their game in just a second. But before we do that, we should talk about our wonderful sponsor, Squarespace. And so our show today is brought to you by them, the beautiful and intuitive website platform that allows anyone to easily create professional web pages, blogs, online stores, and galleries on a single platform. And that's the thing that I want to really make sure everybody understands about Squarespace, because I feel like maybe it hasn't been clear in the past that so what Squarespace is, they provide hosting for your website. They hook up a domain for you if you don't already have one. If you do, they'll use that. You can use that as your domain name. And the biggest thing about Squarespace, the most important and the coolest, is that they also provide the content management software. So whatever you want to do on the web with your personal website, either if it's a personal thing or if it's a business thing, all that software is built into Squarespace for you. So let's say you just want to have maybe you're a business or that you want to have a couple web pages for your business and you want to have a blog. You can do that with Squarespace. It's you just sign up for one plan. They have one plan that will do pages galleries and blogs. So you can have a couple pages, you can have your web blog, and you can have galleries of whatever it is. Let's say you're a, I don't know, you're a car shop, you're an auto repair shop, and you want to set up your web page there, your web presence, and then maybe you want to have your social media stuff going on, so you have a couple web blog posts every once in a while, and you want to have galleries of the shop, and you want to have some links to your other social media stuff that you're doing on Facebook and Twitter. You can have they have a bunch of really cool widgets that are built in. So you can do just standard links to Facebook and Twitter, but you can also have little widgets where you have the feeds from that right in the site. And you don't have to worry about any coding or going to Facebook and Twitter and figuring out how to pull those things in. They have those widgets there. You just type in your username and password, and it's all set up for you right there. You can do the same thing with like Google Maps. So you can have a map of exactly where the place is. It's really cool. And new to Squarespace, we've talked about this before, is Squarespace Commerce. So that if you want to sell anything, and I mean anything, so you can do things that are tangible, and you can do software, intangible stuff too. They have, it's a complete setup where you can manage your inventory. They take care of payments for you. They provide the whole thing. It's great. And the best thing about Squarespace is that they have beautiful designs. I actually talked with somebody from Squarespace, I think it was last week. Adam, do you remember when that was?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we talked to somebody over there about the passion and all the cool stuff that they're doing over at Squarespace. I did not realize that they're pumping out so many of these beautiful themes all the time that they actually retire them after a while. So some of the themes that do really well, they keep them around, and some of the ones that aren't as popular, they retire them. But that doesn't, of course, mean that if you decide to pick one of the ones that are retired, you keep that and you can continue using it. So they have tons of templates here. So and they're based around what sort of thing you want to do with Squarespace. So maybe you're a graphic designer or a photographer, you want to show off some of your artwork. They have a bunch of templates that are better suited for that sort of thing. And they have a bunch of templates that are better suited for businesses or personal websites. And they're all totally customizable. You don't have to download any extra software. You don't have to use any plugins. It's all JavaScript, and it's very easy to do. Anybody can do it. You don't have to know how to do any coding. But if you do know how to do coding, you can jump in there and work with CSS and change colors or add JavaScript or whatever the heck you want to add in there. It's awesome. And all of them are mobile responsive designed as well, so that they look great and work well on desktops with huge screens all the way down to iPhones with teeny tiny screens. And you don't have to worry about coding separate pages or doing separate styles. It just automatically shrinks down, and not just shrinks down, but it also sort of reconfigures and moves some things around a little bit so they fit better on the screen and work much better than if you were just sort of shrinking down a full page site on your own. So what you should do, if you want to check it out, and you really should, because they give you a 14-day free trial. No credit card or anything like that. You just type in your name and you go. Squarespace.com/communicators. So they know that they heard about them from us. And you immediately start by choosing what template you want to do. You don't even you don't type anything in there. You say get started and you choose your template. And then you start designing the site that you want. So then you have 14 days to try it out. You can send people there and play around and do all the stuff that you want to do with it for 14 days. And then after that, once you've decided to buy, you should use code WHC5 for the month of May. Or if it's another month, use the number of the month, so like WHC6 or whatever. And that way you'll get 10% off. So Squarespace, check it out. Start your website free today. a trial for 14 days. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank them so much for sponsoring We Have Communicators. So, yeah.
Yay, we like Squarespace.
Yeah, they're awesome.
They rock.
And they and actually, one of the really cool things I should mention, when I was talking to them, I was mentioning that I use a Drupal site for We Have Communicators. And they're like, you know what? And this is something I should also mention, that you can pull in data from other places like WordPress and Tumblr. So if you already have something, they either already have a way to do it, or what they were telling me was, you know what? I can just talk to one of the engineers and they'll probably be able to pull it in for you, no problem. So they're totally willing to like work with people to move them over with all the data that they already have to Squarespace. So that totally rocks too. So with that, we should talk about the guys who created Game Dev Tycoon. Now, this isn't an iOS application, as I found out, but it's a Mac and Windows app that it's very apropos that these guys did this with this game in particular, because it's in the style of like Roller Coaster Tycoon and those other sorts of games where you start in a garage in the 80s as a game developer, and you're one person, and you build up this game and you continue to evolve it throughout the years and build up your big company. And so what these guys did was, at some point, so they actually put out the pirated version of the application with a slight tweak on it, where at some point you've built up your company to a degree where it's a pretty popular game. It's like a 9 out of 10 kind of game. It's not one of the lower down games. And what happens is you start getting messages as you're working on this, that your game that you're developing within the game is starting to get pirated. So you're getting a lot of users, but it's more and more piracy is happening, and you're losing more and more money as you go. And you soon cannot sustain your development, and you have to close down your company. And so, they did that for just the pirated version. And it was really interesting when they started getting comments in their forums saying, yes, "Hey guys, how do I get past all these pirates? How do I do this? What do I do?"
And if people
from
start,
the pirates,
from the pirates, and they start saying things like, "Oh, well, maybe if I put money into DRM research,"
yeah,
and I'm thinking, "Oh, the delicious irony."
Yeah. Yeah, and then there are tons of really great quotes on their blog. So like, why are there so many people that pirate? It ruins me. From a pirate. And at the time of writing this,
justice.
Yeah, at the time of writing this, they had 3,104 users on the cracked version, and 214 on the paid for version.
Yeah, so it's like 93% of the people playing the game had stolen it.
Yeah. This $8 game by two brothers who are just, you know, they used all their savings to create this game. And it's a phenomenal example of how this works. And I hope that I can only imagine that after all this coverage, they've hopefully gotten some people buying the game, because it seems like a really cool idea.
I've talked to a couple of people that have played it, and they said it just totally consumed them for a while. So, yeah, it sounds like a cool game.
Yeah, I am really interested to see how the gaming mechanisms work for something like this, because it's pretty obvious how you would go about creating a game based around making roller coasters, but something where you're working on game development seems pretty interesting. So very very cool that they did that. but not so cool that there were so many pirates.
Yes.
So
I shake my fist at pirates.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And that's not why I jailbreak, just so you know. Apple, according to KGI securities analyst, is reportedly looking at creating a lower priced iPad mini in the $200 to $250 range. I personally think that, and he says, he puts out quite a few different ways they could do it, such as making lower cost components, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that very likely what Apple's just going to do is when they come out with iPad mini 2, they're going to leave the iPad mini, the current generation out there at a lower cost. Right? That's what
that
you guys
would make sense.
Yeah. And I think that that would be, at that point, they would be doing really well. There would be some significant iPad sales in the lower end. Of course, they're doing really well right now. But what I mean, the idea of erosion at the low end, I can't imagine that would be going on with an iPad at $200. Right? This thing on?
Thinking, did we lose Jeff?
No, you didn't lose me.
Okay.
I know I'm suffering from latency, so I was waiting to say something in case I accidentally started walking on someone.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jeff.
All right. So Apple has a proven track record Apple has a track record of how sales work when you keep around a previous model, because they're doing that with the iPhone. And at least in that market, it's working well enough that they continue to do that. So if they think that they'd be able to do the same with the iPad mini, then fine, they'll do it. But if they think that it's going to kill sales of the new model, then my guess is that they would say, here's the one model, and buy it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm hesitant to say that they would cannibalize sales of the current model. As we've seen, even with the full size iPad, they do the same thing. And certainly there are people who would prefer to get who don't really care too much about the extra speed that you would get. But I think that especially when there's an iPad mini with a Retina display, I think that's enough of a differentiator for most people who would care one way or another to go for the full price, the this year's model of it. And if you think about it, a lot of the tablets that are out there that are in the $200 range are most likely using the quote unquote last year's model technology and processor and that sort of stuff, because that's one of the things you just have to do to keep price down, is you have to use stuff that's been out there longer and has come down in price.
Yeah. This whole thing is just this weird debate, and most of this stuff is coming from analysts in terms of, you know, Apple needs to have lower priced devices and Apple needs to have this, that, and the other. And I mean, we have this conversation all the time here, and I do it on my show and you hear it over and over. Those of us who sort of follow Apple and who are close to Apple, we look at the other sorts of numbers, and they're in direct opposition to this. Every time you look at them, it's
sure.
Like Apple makes the most profit, they're selling the most apps, they have, so yes, they don't have the most, and maybe they're a little bit more expensive, but they're making money on these things. And I think, Jeff, you hit the nail on the head. It's sort of the thing that we always come back to, is Apple will release a lower priced iPad when it makes business and financial sense to release a lower priced iPad. But right now, I think one stat I was reading, I think it was DigiTimes reported that like 65% or 60% of the iPads that Apple sold in the last quarter were iPad minis. So it's their best selling product right now, and they probably don't need to release a cheaper one. A lot of people would probably buy a cheaper one, but all that does is erode their margin. And the other thing that is significant here is that in the quarterly results call, right, this was the first quarter in 10 years where Apple's net profits were down.
Year over year.
And they had a net profit loss, and they haven't had a net profit loss in 10 years. And the major reason, if you look at the numbers, you can see the reason is shrinking margins. And we all have talked about, and we know that the iPad mini has a lower margin. We also know that Apple is selling the older versions of the iPhone at a discount in very heavily in other markets like India and some of the more price-sensitive markets. So they're making lower margins there as well. So those lower margins eventually lead to lower profits. And it's not really a problem for Apple right now. They're still doing very, very, very well if you look at the financials. But it goes into this whole conversation about should Apple be doing lower price point products. And Jeff, you had a great piece on Mac Observer this week talking about this, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And I'm not just saying that because I know you, but you know, it's just like I read that. I'm like, yes, exactly. You know, sort of talking about this whole concept of does Apple need to do a lower price point thing? And yes, they need to be price sensitive in these other markets. But if you notice, Apple is being very smart. They could very easily go and produce a low priced iPhone or a low priced iPad for China, for India. But they're trying other mechanisms at this point that will allow them to maximize profitability, I think, before they resort. Like, this is a last resort thing. Apple will get to a low-priced iPad mini and a low-priced iPhone when it makes the most sense in terms of the product cycle, in terms of the buying cycle, in terms of the behavior of people. And I think too many competitors rush into that. And then what you get yourself into is this whole scenario of selling to the bottom, you know, selling to the person who just wants the low price point. And that really eats your profit margin. And that's a hard arena to compete in. Mm-hmm. And Apple does not like playing in that arena. So they choose to stay out of it as long as they possibly can.
Yeah, Apple also has a pattern of saturating one part of a market and then moving down.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the iPod product line.
Right.
They went for the top of the line, and then they dropped down a tier, and eventually they got down to where they were selling the iPod Shuffle.
Yep.
And I don't think we've hit the point yet where Apple has saturated their high-end market with
certainly
smartphones.
Not in tablets. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly not in tablets.
So phones will be the next thing.
Yeah.
That's why I kind of believe that this year, next year, we could see this low cost iPhone. And I think that's why we're hearing so many rumors about Apple at least investigating or looking into that sort of product. And it really is because they've sort of saturated all of the markets where they can sell high priced phones. And they do need to be seriously looking at India and China and some of these other places where they have to be much more price sensitive. But they just had this whole infusion. If you look at what they were doing in India with doing, you know, payment plans and they have some other creative solutions that are going to allow them to maintain higher profit margins. And when that runs out, then that's when we'll see a low priced iPhone hit the market, you know, and they're going to do the same thing on the tablet side. But right now, you ask anybody, and the iPad is still the tablet that everybody wants.
Yeah.
And so they're going to pay $50, $100 more to get that. And I don't think that's going to make a huge difference in most people's buying decisions. Again, I'm ruling out things like emerging markets and some of these other areas where, you know, they just don't have that kind of money to spend on that sort of tablet. In the meantime, those folks will buy a Android device. But again, all of the research still shows that those people still ultimately want an iPad. So when Apple has that device ready and available for them at the price point that they need to hit, there's not a lot of loyalty in Android at this point, if you look at all the numbers. So they'll switch as soon as Apple has a product available, and they're perfectly fine to wait it out. And I think by the same token, Apple's perfectly fine, as long as the profit is there, to wait it out to deliver that product to those consumers.
You know, I kind of wonder how much Apple worries about what it would mean to developers in the App Store where you're bringing in customers that want to pay the bare minimum for the product on which they're going to be running these applications.
I think Apple is sensitive to that. They're aware of it, but I don't think they factor that too much into their day-to-day decisions.
Well, I guess that's pretty evident in what's happened with the App Store too, with the price to the race to the bottom.
Yeah, to a little bit. I mean, there's still a lot of options for developers, and for a developer at the end of the day, really it comes down to those numbers, like how many consumers do you have to target? I don't even know that developers probably worry too much about the spending habits necessarily of that pool, but it comes down to the sort of the idea that the larger the pool, the more opportunity I have.
Yeah, I guess that,
right?
Either way, so you're saying that either they're not on the platform and they're not spending any money, or they're on the platform and maybe while they might be less inclined to spend money than someone who paid $400 for a device, there are more opportunities for them to actually spend some money. Maybe it's less, but there's the opportunity for them to spend some rather than none.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know, as a developer, especially small developers, I don't know about larger developers, but I would guess that a big factor is popularity of the platform. And at this point, Apple still has the majority share in tablets, at least, of the popularity. You know, I'm not saying that's not going to change sometime soon. I'm not saying that it isn't. I mean, it is changing. And Apple will be sensitive to that. But Apple has always historically, in my mind, been very good about recognizing and seeing when these sort of shifts happen and jumping in, at least over the last 15, 20 years, jumping in at the right point. And I think, Jeff, you gave the model that Apple is going to continue to follow because it was so successful, which is the iPod. You know, if you look at the iPod, you can see how many years it was before they came out with a Nano, and then how many more years before they came out with a Shuffle. And I think if you took that information, this would be a great thing for a business student to do. If you took that information and you looked at it versus sort of the sales numbers and trends and things like that, I think you could see the direct sort of correlation of when Apple hit certain points. And I think you could track it back to profits, directly to profits on those different segments. And I don't think that's changed. And if anything, I think Apple's probably in a better position with Tim Cook at the helm to be aware of those things. I think Tim Cook is probably intimately aware of where those changes are going to happen and when Apple needs to jump in. I think, you know, Jobs was more about the product, and maybe that's where some of the latest concerns are coming, is, you know, Cook seems to be more eye on the stock price, eye on sort of these business trends, whereas Jobs was more about the consumer. And those of us who are, you know, the consumers of these products that are just fanatic like us, does give me pause and concern on a daily basis. It's like, is Apple going to turn more into this business-focused company and not as much of a consumer-focused company, which is the company that I love?
You know, I'm not concerned about that yet. And
I'm not yet either, but I'm cautious about it.
It's something
to
watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cautious, but my caution is related to, well, what happens long term. Right now, what I see is a company where the leaders were picked because of their skill set.
Yep.
And since we can't create a new Steve Jobs, what we do is we create a team of people that can each focus on a different part of what Steve had as his vision. So Tim handles the part where he runs day-to-day operations, but then thinks about the dollars. And then you have people like Bob Mansfeld and Johnny Ive that are handling these other parts of Steve's vision. So, so I think we'll still, for a long time, have the Apple that we wanted, or that we want, where it's consumer-focused and it's make it friendly, make it useful, make it cooler than anything else focused. And it just, is being done in a different way than it was before.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have this whole debate going on, right, of like Apple needs to do something. Apple's not moving. Apple's not innovating and all of this sort of stuff. But I think if you pull back and you go, okay, well, let's look at Apple as a consumer-focused company at this point, it starts to make sense to me. I'm looking at it and reading these reports and going, well, what does Apple need to do? Because they're delivering for me as a consumer. I cannot at this point say, I wish if my iPad or my iOS device or my Mac or whatever just did this, I would be having a better experience. I would be more productive. I would be, you know, I think they have some time at this point to sort of figure things out. And what's interesting is that Apple, I think, is aware, intimately aware of this. And I think they're taking the time. They're going, like, we don't have a lot of pressures on us at this point. So we don't need to rush something to market. We don't need to make mistakes. We can wait. And yes, that might, in the short term, impact our stock price. We might take some flack in the media for it. But we're willing to accept that because we know that if we take this time now, when we do have products and new things to release in the fall and in 2014, we're going to be so far ahead of our competitors because all of our competitors are just trying to catch up with what we did last year. And we're already thinking about 2 years from now.
It goes back to what is it a Wayne Gretzky quote that Steve Jobs loved? Skate to yeah. where the puck is going, not where it is.
Exactly.
And yeah, I think Apple is still doing that. And yeah. I think their competition, for the most part, is still skating to where the puck is.
Yeah. They're still trying to figure out how to catch up to Apple, and I think they're still scratching their head, going, "Why haven't people, why haven't people jumped on board with what we have? Because we're doing all these crazy things that are really technologically really cool and interesting, but you know, functionally they're not improving people's lives." And Apple's going, "We're going to figure out what the next thing to change someone's life is." You know, the new dichotomy. And I think at this point, the problem is Apple doesn't even necessarily know exactly what that is yet. And I think Apple doesn't know because we as consumers don't even really know. And Apple's going to tell us at some point, and then everybody's going to go, oh, yeah. So now they're going to get to where the puck is and then realize, oh, the puck is now over there. And the whole cycle will start over again. So,
yeah,
I'm not at all worried about where Apple is, and you know, as much as I'm frustrated because I want to see new cool things from Apple, I don't think there's anybody pressuring Apple to do that. You can point to small little things that, you know, maybe Samsung is doing or maybe Google is doing, but it's nothing really at the end of the day if you separate yourself from how cool the technology is, that you can sort of say, oh yeah, I absolutely have that. And this may be a good transition, Michael, because I am pretty impressed with the Google Now stuff. I think we're getting to that, right?
Yeah. So Google updated their Google Search app for iOS, and it now includes Google Now, as yeah. we've been anticipating. And
I like it.
So far, it's told me what the weather is where I am and how to get home.
I had a cool experience because, you know, my mom was in town visiting, and when she comes, I as a sort of guest, put her information, her travel information into my TripIt, and mm-hmm. I log into TripIt with my Google account. So when I pulled up Google Now, it was the day before her flight was due to go, it popped up and said, oh, hey, here's your flight information for tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of cool.
And it said that it was going to take a really, really long time for you to get to the airport, so you should start driving now.
It did. It had directions. I think it did have directions to the airport and what have you. So
to where she was landing or to where she was departing?
Departing here in San Diego.
Oh, I see. I understand. So I was under the assumption that it was...
Actually, it did help us because she thought her flight was at 2:15, and when I opened up Google Now, it was like, oh, it's at 2:25, and it was actually at 1:15. We went, wait a minute, did you have the information wrong? She said, oh yeah, I got it confused. So it actually we would have been late to the airport. So it worked out cool. because it popped up right in the Google Now and said, here's your flight information for tomorrow. The flight is on time. And because I had plugged that, you know, I had logged into TripIt with my Google account. Now, so that was the cool part of the experience. The sort of creepy part of the experience is that, you know, TripIt is not, I don't think it's a Google, is it a Google? It's not a Google company, right?
Not that I know of.
Right.
So this was information that I plugged into a third-party service that's not Google, as far as I know. Yet, because I used my Google login, Google Now was aware of that information. And I don't know how I feel about that aspect of it. Like, I didn't implicitly, I said, yes, I want to log in with Google. And probably when that popped up, it probably said, is it okay if we access your information and share this information with Google? And I probably did authorize it. But at the same time, you know, even me as a tech savvy user, I did think, well, this is a little bit, we're riding that fine line between cool and creepy. Does that make sense?
Yes, it totally makes sense. Because, okay, so to this point, Google has just been doing the take and not giving us anything back for all the information we give them. With right. Google Now, we get a little back. In exchange for getting a little back, we give them a lot more of our personal information. So now they can track where we are very precisely, what we're doing very precisely. So it's really creepy because Google probably through the data they're tracking can tell us more about our lives than we can.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You're getting at it. And where the super creepy part comes into it is I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Well, they're making it very convenient for us. Mm-hmm. And that's a really brilliant move because if it's convenient for us to give them that information and we're getting something back out of it that makes our lives easier, well, then it becomes very easy just to let them have the information.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's like, it's funny because you have, you know, 1984, right, which was supposed to be this big thing, like, oh, this is really bad. Yet when things like this happen, I'm going, I kind of actually think I maybe want to live in 1984 where someone has all of my information and then can just make my life easier for me. And at that point, I'm just this big lemming and drone that is controlled by a big conglomerate. So,
yes, but you're a lemming and drone controlled by a big conglomerate that
happy.
Will miss his flight.
Exactly.
Bingo.
Oh, man.
I can't
wait
for
it. We're all going to be plugged into the Matrix and that's it. We're all just batteries.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just copper tops.
I can't wait for Google Now to, like, know when I eat food and also know that I'm vegan, so that basically what I'm saying is I want it to know when I'm hungry and it to be like, hey, this place you can eat, it's vegan friendly and it's highly rated and it's only 10 minutes from you.
It does that though, right?
But it doesn't know that I'm vegan and it doesn't know that I'm hungry.
It can. Okay, so Michael, this is something I see coming with Google Glass.
Okay,
you're wearing your Google Glass all the time, so the camera is getting images of the stuff you're eating, and
doing active Google image searches for similar things,
right
on menu systems at different places. Yeah.
I figured you were going to say that the Google Glass would have to like. To do this, I would need to have something in my butt, so to analyze my diet, which that might be a good
analyze your excrement.
Yeah, that could be a good startup.
So Google Glass, Google Ass.
I didn't even realize I was setting you up for that.
I didn't either until it came out, and there you go.
I thought I was being all clever, but I was. Somebody beat me to the punch because I was saying I was going to call anybody who wearing Google Glasses basically a glass hole.
Mm-hmm.
Which yeah. I think is brilliant.
Yeah, but it was coined like years ago. Somebody else already beat me to the punch on that one.
Yeah, but they don't have your charming personality, so they don't count.
That's true.
I'm saying that not knowing who did it, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we should move on to our picks. Yeah.
But I don't have one.
Okay, well, then I'll let Jeff go because I'm sure he has one.
Of course I do. I'm going with a game this week.
All right.
And it's iPhone and iPad, and it's called Circadia. And it's the concept is very simple. You have a white dot, that's your target. Then you have a color dot. And when you tap the color dot, it radiates out this ring. And when the ring crosses the white dot, then you've completed the level. So that's it at its simplest point. Now add in multiple dots, and they're different colors. Depending on the color of the dot, the ring will radiate out faster or slower. So now you have to tap the dots on the screen in the right order at the right time to get the rings to intersect on the white target at the same time. So very simple concept, but it can get very complex very quickly. Yeah. And eventually it gets to the point where the white dot will be moving around the screen. So now you have this moving target where you have to get these multiple dot radiation ring things to intersect at the same time and hit the target.
That sounds stressful.
So, yeah, it's actually really cool. And I think it's like $4.
It is $1.
Oh, it's $1. Okay, even better. And if you run into your Starbucks this week, and so this is the first week of May, so run into your Starbucks, they have free gift cards for it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'll probably be doing that because I believe tomorrow through like what, the 12th or something is
price fraps.
Yeah, from 3 to 5. So Frappy Hour, yes. Is that what they're calling it? Or did I just say that?
No, I think it's called something like Frappy Hour, but half price Frappuccinos at Starbucks. It's like 3 to 5 in the evening, starting in a day or so, and then, yeah, it runs through like the 10th. Is that what you said? Does that sound right?
I don't know. I pulled a number out of
actually,
my butt,
you know so. What? I have the Starbucks app on my phone.
It didn't tell me there.
Well, it'll tell me because...
Because you know how to use it.
Because I know how to use it. Okay, here we go. They actually sent me a message. You know why? Starbucks thinks I'm cool. May 3rd through May 12th, 3 to 5 p.m., enjoy half off any Frappuccino blended beverage at participating stores. And there you go.
And I was told by a barista friend of mine to be nice to the baristas during this period because they will be very stressed out.
Okay. Yeah. Be nice to your barista.
Yeah.
And be nice to your barista all the time.
I agree.
Because they're cool people. They are magic in your life because they give you the special elixir that you need to get through the day. Mm-hmm. Treat these people well.
Indeed. And then maybe they'll make a little design in your coffee.
And recognize they work for a massive corporate entity that cares nothing about them.
Yep.
That's true. Okay, here's how cool the baristas are. At the Starbucks that I go to in Estes Park, they sat down with me and helped me figure out what Frappuccinos I can drink. And ooh. So they helped custom design Frappuccinos. And my nieces picked up on this, and they figured out how to create a custom Frappuccino that I can drink.
Cool.
So, yeah. So that's how cool the baristas are. They say what you will about mega corporations. It's about the people that work there. And they're awesome. They treat me fantastic.
Yeah, and I know that if you go there enough and you don't show up for a certain period of time, they may start worrying if you're dead. And I'm referring to our friend Barry, who I believe has had that happen.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, and yeah, it's to the point for me.
He was probably just out of town.
Oh yeah, he's
he was out of town. So I tell my baristas when I'm traveling.
Oh yeah, so they don't get worried.
Yeah.
Where's Jeff been? Let's call his mom.
Too. Baristas are people too. They're just people, folks.
They are. So Circadia, it's $1 or free at Starbucks.
Yes.
So, Adam, what is your pick?
I know what I'm going to pick, and it's timely, and I can't believe we haven't picked it. It's the Jar Jar Abrams app.
Jar Jar Abrams?
Now, we don't get to call him that until he screws up the new Star Wars movie, assuming he does.
Until, before that, not if.
Before that, we're still supposed to call him JJ.
Okay. Okay.
It's the Bad Robot interactive app.
Okay.
Action Movie FX. How have we not picked this one yet? Do you guys have this on your device?
I have not heard of this.
You haven't heard of it? Oh, dude, this thing is so awesome. I love playing around with this. So it's basically this little video app, and it's got a bunch of effects. I can't remember if it's free or not. I need to look it up. I think it's a couple bucks. And then it has in-app purchase. But the in-app purchase is really cool because you can get different effects. But basically, you fire it up, you record a target segment of video, and it'll give you a little sort of target area, like a crosshair. And the reason it does that is what happens is you shoot video and then it will overlay Hollywood style visual effects on the video that you record. So you can have like missile blasts, you can have like different explosions, car smashes, you can have meteorites dropping from space and landing on people, stuff blowing up, and it's funny because it does look pretty good. I mean, it's a little cheesy, but if you shoot the video, if you capture the right video, it can look very, very cool. And so you can then export this stuff and you could pull it into iMovie. You can add it into your edits and stuff like that. So it lets you add really cool Hollywood style visual effects to your videos. And it's just a whole lot of fun. And it's one of those apps, you know, to me, it's one of those sort of show off how cool the iPhone or the iPad apps is. You show this to somebody and they're like, oh, I got to have that app.
What's the app called? I can't find it.
It's Action Movie Effects.
Oh, okay.
By FX.
I do see it. I didn't realize.
Bad Robot Interactive.
I did not realize that was by Bad Robot. I just thought that was some random.
Yeah.
Thing. That's so cool.
And it's timely because, you know, May 17th, Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah. Isn't isn't Iron Man out tonight or tomorrow?
Iron Man is out tomorrow, or probably tonight at midnight.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, so May 2nd at midnight you can go and see Iron Man. It's officially launching on the 3rd.
Officially blasting off. Yes, but Action Movie FX is Robot Interactive, and it's free, so I'm totally going to check that out.
Yeah, and the free effects are awesome, and then you can buy little, I think they're $1 or $1.99 packs, and right now I think they have some free ones for Call of Duty Black Ops. I think they're doing a promotion at the moment.
That's super cool.
Yeah,
they have some for
Star Trek Into Darkness. Yeah, that's right.
Is it May 12th? Star Trek?
May 17th.
17th. Oh, that's the same day that Random Access Memories gets released in countries other than the United States. Also known as the day that it will probably have leaked by then. So.
Yeah. So Action Movie FX has been around for a while, but it's a good one. I was just playing with it last night. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, I've definitely seen it before. I just never... I just assumed based on the icon that it was some crap, but now that I know that it's based on that Bad Robot made it, then it's
well, they,
I'm sure
they
it's good.
Might not have made it, they might have just bought it out, but
that's true. Not everybody likes it on Appler, but Adam certainly does.
It's fun. It's fun.
And that's
like
good
I said, I put it in the category of this is the app that you pull out, you know, when someone's like, why do you have why do you like the iPhone so much? Like, look at this. This is so cool.
Check this out. I'm going to blow you up.
I can blow up your sister-in-law. And they'll be like, yes.
Cool. Gotta have that. Again. Do it again.
Do it again. Yeah. Okay, cool. So it's Action Movie FX. It's free and it looks pretty awesome. So check it out. So my pick this week is one that we might have talked about. We've certainly talked about Tweetbot. But my pick this week is NetBot, And it's for app.net. And the reason I'm talking about it is because it's free now. It's been free since like February. I didn't realize that it went free, but it used to cost a couple bucks. And because I wasn't too active on app.net, I just grabbed the free riposte. And I wasn't too...
Riposte? I've just been saying repost.
Okay, maybe repost.
I don't know.
I don't know how to say it. Whatever it was. Yeah, it used to be $5 for...
Riposte.
Riposte. Yes. It used to be $5 for
so
NetBot.
I'm so uncultured.
You have to put your pinky out when you say it, too. And
all right, my pinky's out. I'm so uncultured.
There you go.
Now it's just creepy.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not. So, but it's basically Tweetbot, but for app.net. So it's awesome. And if you don't like Tweetbot, then you probably won't like this. So I guess go with Riposte. But check out NetBot if you're on app.net.
App.
Mm-hmm. And the iPad version is free as well. So get on it. Yeah. All right. So with that, are you guys, well, I should say, what ones are you guys using now for app.net?
On
Kiwi.
My iPhone?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Kiwi?
And NetBot.
Yeah. Okay. So on my Mac, it's Kiwi. On my iPhone, it's Riposte. And on my iPad, it's NetBot.
Okay. And NetBot also lets you do cross-posting, too. Do all those other ones do that for you?
I believe the in-app upgrade for Post A, excuse me, is where you get the cross-posting.
Cool. To cross-post to Twitter. So.
Yes.
But I noticed is, like, for example, Scott Simpson, who usually doesn't post anything that's not a joke to Twitter, he posts like normal human being things on app.net, which is interesting. I like the idea. I'd never thought of the of separating like a church and state kind of thing. So one's for silliness and one's for being professional, although I'm not sure which one's which yet.
And if we did know, it would just take the mystery out, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, check it out. Yeah. With that, we'll say that you should check out wehavecommunicators.com. You should review the show in iTunes, tell a friend, burn a CD, give it to them, play it in their car, force them to listen to it. Because everybody loves that. Here, listen to this. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is how you contact us. You have a question, comment, audio comment, whatever. Email us. It's cool. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. And of course, check out Squarespace this month. The code is WHC5. You get 10% off. Squarespace.com/communicators, so they know that we sent you to them. And they're awesome. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer. MacObserver.com, at JGamet on Twitter, and at JGamet on app.net.
Yes, I am.
All right. And
it was so fun, as always.
As always. It's great to have you. Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com, at MacCast on Twitter and on app.net, and member.maccast.com.
is the membership program, yeah.
Yep, it is.
I just did an episode on Pages for iOS, which was something I had not gotten into.
Yeah, Pages is awesome on iOS.
Yeah, but there's all these. See, the thing is like, it's great, but every time I go in to use it, I don't know what I'm doing. You have to know like the secret gestures.
Oh,
right?
There are
you
secret
have to
gestures?
Know like all the little like how do I match the size of two different images and how do I constrain my selections, you know, my drags to a certain orientation. And so we covered all those sort of little gesture tips that you need to know.
Okay, I didn't know about that. That's cool.
There's all kinds of cool little gestures that make working in that thing just totally awesome. And it makes sense because with the new paradigm, and I talk about this a little bit, right, is that as we transition to this post-PC era, we're going to have to sort of learn these new new paradigms. And the one thing that hasn't happened yet that I'm hoping will eventually happen is that there's some sort of standardization of gestures. Yeah. Right now, everything's all over the board. And as a matter of fact, I was doing a presentation to the My Mac user group, something that I had not noticed until I was literally in the middle of my presentation last night and trying to show people the, I always call it the open with option in iOS for like managing files. So like when you go into an app, you hit the share button and you go into open with. And I realized like even Apple is guilty of this. In like Pages, it's not open with. It's like open in an app or something. I forget now. I'm even blanking because I just can't even remember. They use a different terminology. And some apps use open with. Some apps use open in. Some apps use, you know, something else. And then some apps will use the share button, that little square thing with the sort of arrow jumping out of it. And others use like a thing that looks like a download icon. There's like no standardization in iOS. And I think long term, this is going to be a real problem.
Well, I think that's something that to a degree they try to enforce in the interface guidelines. For me, I think
I don't even think they have those anymore for iOS. There are interface guidelines.
No, they do.
That's the ultimate problem.
Yeah, I'm kind of questioning that too.
I think no. I think that for the most part, if you look at the interface guidelines,
but there's no enforced. The thing is, in the past, in the Mac, there was enforced adherence to the interface guidelines. There was stuff like in the code that said you can't have copy outside of the file menu, you know, like that, or the edit menu, excuse me. So those restrictions I don't think are in place anymore. And so I think their developers are going to have to come to a consensus and to do this, but I digress. I'm getting away from, you know, ending the show. we could have a whole nother topic, but I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, that is one thing that I was pretty frustrated with, like recently, is the how some developers use that little share button as some kind of extra action menu.
Well, and it goes back to gestures. Like every app has its own sort of gesture language, and it's sort of how do you know that? And I had a great conversation with again, I'm going to digress and move away, but I think this is important to point out. I had a great conversation one time at Macworld with Ken Case, and they were excited about gestures, and they're like, we're going to do all this cool gesture stuff in our next app. And they pulled it all out because when they started sort of working with it, they realized we're going to have to like train people on how to use the app, and we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Like people should be able to open the app and start using it. They shouldn't have to learn a whole gestural language to figure out how to do stuff.
Yep.
So Apple totally is guilty of that in Pages, and that's why I did that episode. And I'm probably going to do Keynote and Numbers at some point, too. So if you want to check that out, that's member.maccast.com.
Cool.
And I'm done with my huge plug.
Yes. And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter and on app.net. And I'm also Get Appler on Twitter. I think it might just be Appler on app.net. And, of course, check out Appler, if you haven't, getappler.com, getappler. And with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod.
How are we going to communicate this?
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.